Hey folks, it's Alec here again. I'm excited to bring to you another episode of our video podcast series focusing on the craft of starting up, particularly for creatives. And I'm thrilled to be joined today with our latest guest. His name is Julian Park. What's up, Julian? He's the co-founder and CEO of Bezzy, which is an incredible tool that you can use for 3D animations, which obviously has become a lot more exciting recently with Apple's new Vision Pro announcement, which we're going to talk about. But we're going to cover a number of things here. We're going to talk about things like how we came up with the idea, but also customer sales decks, and also how to actually use this type of software, because there's a lot of people who are interested in it. But we're going to kick things off with a quick kind of backstory for you. So first of all, Julian, great to see you.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, great to see you.
Awesome. I'd love to start with a little bit about your interest in 3D work, because it hasn't started with, you know, the same interest starting point that everyone else had from a week or two ago when we just had this big announcement and everyone sharing videos of them using the Apple Vision Pro. But for you, this started a lot earlier. So maybe you can take us back to the beginning point for you and kind of what led you to this point.
Yeah. So I think it started all the way back when I was studying computer graphics in college. So I really just gained interest in thinking through like how computers understand the world around us. And obviously the world is in 3D. And so a lot of more advanced computing and computer graphics tends to be more on 3D than 2D. And with that, you know, I took like a graphics course in college and just really enjoyed how detailed or just like how beautiful some of these computer graphics renderings could be. So, you know, with that passion, I was looking for jobs like after college, like, okay, where can I use these things that I've learned and studied? And, you know, Oculus, this was right after the acquisition by Facebook. Oculus kind of had the perfect environment for me to kind of exercise these lessons, because they were really starting to figure out how does an OS look like for this kind of headset computer thing on your face. Because, you know, we knew what like an iOS or like what a phone OS looked like. But we didn't really know what a VR OS looked like. And so I had the privilege of being in that small team, just really figuring out how the product would work, how the designs would work. I went pretty deep into like 3D graphics, 3D design, 3D product building around like 2018.
Can you talk a bit about, you know, in previous years, you know, there are many a 2D interface that would say they've got like a 3D game or something where there's this sense of depth of a character walking across the screen. It kind of looks 3D-ish. And, you know, what you're describing with the Oculus is not 3D like that is 3D. Can you talk a bit about the, you know, what I imagine are kind of some philosophical differences between those two 3D concepts and kind of how that plays into your interests?
Yeah. Well, I think with VR, like, 3D really is immersive. Like, so, you know, I think that there's a difference between like 2D, 3D and like 3D immersion. And I think when you're really immersed in an environment through like a headset wearable, I think you suddenly open up this whole world, this whole canvas of like what you can bring into the world, which is so different from looking at a rectangular screen in front of you and then thinking that it's a 3D scene contained in like a 2D surface. So
it feels like there's like this incongruence in the way that you want to think about things and the way things used to exist when it came to 3D stuff. And you're like, I gotta, like, that's what's exciting about Oculus to you. It's like, no, this is really 3D.
Right, exactly. And like, there's plenty of like 3D, like computer animation films, like like the Toy Stories of the world that came out from quite a while ago, actually. But I think with this new generation of computing, it's really about, okay, how do I kind of use the space around me, mm-hmm. this actual like 3D space covering my whole like field of view, into a digital canvas, and that actually like just opens up the playing field to a much larger degree of content. Yeah.
Can you paint a bit? So for me, that I'm relatively new to 3D stuff, uh-huh. other than seeing all these videos of like the Apple Vision Pro yeah. with somebody with 800 tabs of Twitter open at the same time and scrolling all over the place. Can you talk a bit about what some of the opportunities are? Because I feel like, you know, as we were talking earlier, where we're at with this stuff, it reminds me a lot of when mobile had just come out and you were opening up like a web page on a mobile device and you'd pull up the website and then you'd scroll in a gajillion times and try and navigate through because the websites weren't responsive to a mobile device. And right now that what everyone's sharing is, you know, putting on the headset and just seeing all these rectangular browser tabs open. That doesn't feel like we're embracing the potential of it. So can you talk about like what is that potential? Like what could we do with this?
No, I really like your example with the mobile websites because every new sort of tech platform mm-hmm. has its initial phase of bootstrapping the content ecosystem, right? So when you first have your mobile form factor in front of you, it's not, you know, it doesn't make sense for all the websites in the world to suddenly be already prepared for that form factor. So what you got was like these sites that are super dense and that your thumb is too big to like press on those links. So you have to you got to zoom. And then that's what happened for the iPhone. Something similar also happened, which is interesting to talk about, which is when the iPad first came out. Mm-hmm. You might remember how a lot of the earliest apps were all like iOS apps. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of have this like small rectangle in the center that you have to like 2x and it becomes kind of blurry. And you kind of like have to like adjust to the fact that the screen is much larger now.
Yeah.
So I think that also, you know, it got better over time. Right? Nowadays, you know, like the typical average sort of iPad app is fine. Right? Yeah. It's not that blurry 2x version anymore. But with this sort of Vision Pro generation, I think a similar thing is happening to your point where by default, you know, we're starting off with 2D apps in front of us, like a plethora of just 2D apps floating in front of us, which, you know, it's fine and it's a great place to start. But I think what will happen is developers and designers and just teams in general will realize that the best way to leverage the third dimension is to add in more 3D elements to like these apps and maybe even games so that like people can actually make use of the immersiveness mm-hmm. that I just talked about. And I think that's really the tipping point of like why it's worthwhile to even get a spatial computer beyond your typical laptop screen.
I feel like this is a good time to talk a little bit about one of the things that we're going to go through, which is you have like a customer deck. So give us a little bit of a sense of who some of Bezzy's customers tend to be.
It's currently largely focused around tech companies mm-hmm. who are building 3D content or 3D apps or platforms. So, you know, it could be a company that's building out these like AR, VR hardware and software apps on top. So like Meta is an example of a company that's like using Bezzy to kind of redesign the OS and kind of iterate there on the product. I think there's this sort of like, you know, I kind of think of it as like concentric circles of customer profiles. Mm-hmm. And the second circle would be more around like game design and like game designers who, you know, might work at a game studio or like a bigger sort of game company. But they're not necessarily programmers.
Right.
And so they can use a tool like Bezzy to kind of prototype and like kind of spec out the gameplay and the input mechanisms and like how the environment or the game level will be set up and stuff like that without having to jump into like a game engine like Unity or Unreal.
Would it be safe to say that a lot of like the use case for something like Bezzy is kind of like what InVision was, you know, unfortunately it's out of business now, but back in the day of mocking up mobile apps, this is kind of for anything that has like this 3D immersive experience. This is a tool used to prototype and mock up and try.
I think we do want to like encourage Bezi users to start with their primitives like inside Bezi as much as possible. Mm-hmm. So we do offer like an array of like 3D modeling tools or like default assets that you could use in order to kind of populate the scene from Bezi. Because you know, I do think like the goal here really is to have design teams start with Bezi from the very beginning, from the ideation stage, yeah, all the way up to the production stage, right? So no one's gonna like ship production software through Bezi right now because there's like separate game engines for that. Yeah. But right now what Bezi supports is like this sort of design and prototyping phase. Got for it. The whole team.
Cool. So let's, before we dig into the customer deck, one of the things that's interesting about something like this is you're really at the forefront of some interesting technology here. For a lot of selling of software, there is a, you know, a kind of standard sales deck, and you kind of go in and here's the product and here's the features and here's whatever. That's not kind of how you have to sell something like this. You actually have to tell a story too. Can you talk a bit about how you frame that narrative and why that's important?
Yeah, I think especially with like VisionOS coming out, I think a lot of what we're trying to do as a company is to motivate or encourage, or rather inspire people and companies, mm-hmm, to develop for this new platform.
Cool.
And we have to take on the responsibility of portraying the business value of having an app on VisionOS,
yeah,
beyond your iOS or your macOS apps or websites. Mm-hmm. And I think we are uniquely able to do that because we have an app, or like a design tool that these companies can use pretty easily to get started. And so I think the way I approach it right now, I mean, who knows how it'll evolve in the future, but the way I think about it is I want to kind of stay relatively high level, mm-hmm, and like kind of walk people through from their perspective, like, hey, like this is where the world is moving and like how technology is evolving, and like how Bezi can help you reach that new population in this new paradigm of computing beyond your typical websites. It's almost like when, you know, in the past, a lot of tech companies where they just had like websites or web apps. Yeah. And then when the iPhone came out, they're like, oh, now we're a mobile company. Now we're mobile first. We have mobile apps, right? Oh. That kind of became like a phrase. But nowadays, when people say they're like a tech company, it's assumed that they have these apps on these platforms. Yeah. They don't say like, oh, we're a mobile first company per se, right?
And so this is the next stage.
Right, it's like, cool, we'll probably hear like, oh, you know, we're a spatial company. Like, yeah, we're a spatial, you know, product.
Yeah. Cool, so let's go through it a little bit. And if you can, sure, kind of at a high level, like, talk us through what are you trying to communicate to these people and how that builds towards them saying, right, we need to start investing in this because this is going to be something important that we're all going to be using soon.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is just a like an easy to use deck that I've made. It doesn't have any numbers or like strict sort of investment ROIs. Mm-hmm. It's really focused on who I am. Mm-hmm. And so it goes through my background at Oculus, which I talked about. I was building out these apps and then kind of evolving that into a narrative around like how I saw something, almost a secret or a glimpse of the future, if you will,
yeah,
that now you as a company can now also take advantage of.
Right.
I think that's kind of the inspiration here. That's the goal.
Cool.
So I can just jump right in. as I mentioned, a lot of these apps that you see in the top left, those are the ones that I really kind of helped build. Mm-hmm. In the OS that goes inside the Quest. A lot of designers, they wouldn't really know how to design or prototype for this kind of 3D software, mm-hmm, for this kind of 3D scene. So this is kind of like a meme in itself, but it kind of shows you how complex or even how silly a spatial design might feel like. Because like for someone who doesn't know how to use technical, complicated 3D software, how do you design or prototype 3D interactions?
That's funny because, you know, when you think about going from a desktop browser to a mobile phone, like the things in your hand, so obviously you have like a thumb, I suppose. It's, right. I think you can kind of assume this, but when you put the headset on, like, people will intuitively gesture at a thing, like, you know, to select something, they could use this gesture, they could use that gesture, they could use two fingers. I don't know.
Right.
So you have to kind of see what's intuitive, and that's part of the learning process.
Exactly. So, you know, like Apple, for example, used like gaze and pinch as one of their primary input mechanisms for their OS.
Right.
And, you know, Oculus obviously has those controllers that you could also use, which kind of leans more towards the game console sort of use case as well. But I mean, this is kind of like a wide open field of like just, the, you know, it just kind of shows you the endless possibilities of how you can design.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I go to show how designers, because they didn't have these tools, would, you know, use tools like Figma and bring these Figma files to meetings.
Yeah.
But whenever they would bring these files to meetings, people would ask, hey, how do I visualize this in 3D? Because it's obviously, it's all in 2D. And so what designers would say is like, oh, I would have to work with a prototyper who would use a game engine like Unity and script out like an interactive 3D prototype in C#. And like they gotta like compile it and like debug it and like package that and then like, you know, send over this package to a remote headset. This is also during COVID. So people were like, how do I get my headset software version to be your headset software version?
Right.
So that was the whole, you know, chaotic moment. And honestly, you know, it took a lot of time for this loop to happen constantly.
Right.
This, if anything, you know, provides a like a market map or also a mental model of where Bezi fits into the market. Because, you know, obviously we have 2D design tools, but what that also meant was we had like 2D production development software, like Xcode, for example. But with the 3D sort of spatial computing realm, we had development production software like Unity, but we didn't have a design tool. And this was where the struggle, where the pain points really were at these companies like Oculus.
And so you're stepping in at an earlier phase of the development and creating custom tools so that you're not throwing stuff over the fence to engineers that need to get reworked constantly because it's not working just right.
Right, 100%. We're empowering the designers to be able to create like higher fidelity prototypes and experiences so that they can also conduct their own research sessions.
Do you think it's more important to have designers take more of an active role and be more, I don't want to say in charge is probably not the right word, but more active in driving the experience when you're dealing with this kind of spatial stuff versus 2D?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, I think one way to think about it, you know, stepping back for a second, I like to think about it as like how the center of gravity of creativity is shifting more towards the designer. Mm. And I can kind of explain that, which is we've actually been seeing this recently with like the image generation, like DALL-E, the Midjourneys of the world, where it's not so like the differentiation factor or where the time is spent is not on the implementation details, like the production side.
Yeah.
It's actually the ideation and the design side that determines the quality or the experience itself.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that too, because you know, with tools like DALL-E and some of these other ones, you know, anybody can make a logo.
Yeah.
Anybody can make an image. Anybody can make a video now of whatever and describe it and have it made. And I think some people might speculate that designers are then like, what do you need a designer for, right?
Right.
and yet, you know, it seems like it's probably going to go the other way, where like this idea of like taste and having a vision for something and being able to like make it, it's actually the other way around. It's going to empower designers to take more action. And it's funny also hearing about some well-known voices talking about, you know, kicking product management to the curb a little bit and just giving, you know, handing the wheel over to the designers, which I'm sure folks have opinions on. But I do, it does in a sense, I feel like it makes, there's a philosophy to it of like putting the people who are creating the experience, envisioning the experience in more charge of the experience does seem to make sense.
100%. And I think this, we've already seen this kind of shift happen with like the 2D design tool evolution we've seen the past decade, where I think it, like in the past, if people are using like Illustrator for their UI designs, let's say, a lot of the center of gravity, again, was around the engineering of like making the tool itself happen, like making the app itself ship, and the coding of it. And the design was kind of the siloed function on the side to like kind of inform what it will look like. Mm-hmm. But I think nowadays, at least, it's sort of evolved into this central role in the product development process, or like now design is kind of deciding which features go in, how it works, and like how it'll all connect, you know, from a company sort of product standpoint. And one industry that hasn't been touched yet from this movement perspective has been the 3D industry.
Really?
So a lot of the 3D tools that people use, and you know, I'm sure people might have different opinions on like how they feel at different 3D companies, but a lot of what this process looks like today is pretty much how this like app design world looked like 20 years ago, where 3D designers are still using very complicated like modeling tools, very complicated game engines that require them to understand how to program stuff just to be able to participate in the final output.
Right.
Where with tools like Bezi, what it's doing is it's shifting the center of gravity to the earlier sides of the phase, so that the designers again have more of a say and more of a, you know, more of an influence on what the product looks like and how it works.
Do you mind if we actually shift from the customer deck? I'd love to pull up in the demo, and maybe you can kind of walk us through and give a specific example of like what that looks like.
Yeah. So that was a sort of a typical file grid. I'm just opening a new file just to show you how the basic editor first works.
Okay.
Before you actually make anything, so previously, if you wanted to design something in 3D, you're going into Figma, you're making something 2D, and then maybe it gets thrown over the fence and it works the way you want, but more likely it goes back and forth and back and forth and back and forth.
Right, right? Kind of like the diagram you saw. Yeah.
Alternatively, you know, maybe you're very senior as a designer and you are now sophisticated enough that you're using some of the engineering and prototyping tools after 20 years of experience doing that, which maybe is not accessible for your typical designer.
Yeah.
So now take us into, now we got that headspace. You come in with Bezi and let's see the alternative approach. And take us through that.
Yeah. So the first thing you'll probably realize is that this general structure of the web app feels like a 2D design tool,
right?
Because the typical 3D design tool that people might remember are these huge walls of UI buttons that are kind of thrown at you to decide like, okay, what tools to use and like which buttons to start and press with. And like, there are all these like mouse keys that you have to like master to be able to like create something. Mm-hmm. What we're trying to do is we're really trying to simplify what we even expose to the end user. Mm-hmm. So we have sort of this like property panel, which a lot of designers should be pretty much
already familiar with.
And we have these like top menu bars where you can just add different primitive objects. So you got like boxes, spheres, and so on. We have like a pen tool, where you can like draw stuff here, and it all kind of connects into like shapes like that. And you can always leave comments as well. Mm-hmm.
There's multiplayer too.
Exactly.
Right.
So structurally it sort of offers this infinite canvas in 3D that anyone can really access. Because anyone with a laptop can open a browser tab.
Yeah.
And like just go to this new link, new file link, and just like start creating. And from here on, you know, it's just, you know, we've provided this low barrier to entry, and like it's up to the end user to just decide how deep they want to go on top.
Yeah. So if you were prototyping like a meeting experience, how would you do that? I think you showed me that you have like some objects of humans. Could you like place them around a table, kind of thing like that?
Yeah.
And then you ship that to an engineer and say, here's how this should look.
Exactly. So that's a good place to start. So we have like a human as a sample object that you could add. So I'm just going to drop one there. It might feel weird for some people because they're like, how do I you know, reason through space and sizes. Because, you know, in the 2D world, it's all about pixels. But now it's about, like, meters and feet and, like, sort of all these size units. And I think that is what the design world will kind of slowly move into, because now they're going to think about how the human arm can reach content and, like, that's a certain distance and, you know, that
right,
kind of stuff.
Because they're going to reach and forget
right.
about that.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of, like, sort of distance, sort of physics related as well. But, you know, we try to make it as easy as possible to kind of get started in. So we also, you know, in addition to this human, we also offer some other assets that you could use. So, for example, we have, like, these basic free assets that Bezi provides. So if you just double click here, it adds a desk in front of you. And so you can kind of see, like, how it's now setting up this, like, scene.
When you're designing an experience like this, are you including both the assets and images that are going to be projected into the 3D experience as well as, like, a typical scenery? So, for example, with that desk, is that, like, a real desk, but could it also be, or is that a 3D desk, or is that also a potentially a real desk? Like, hey, this guy's probably going to be standing at his desk.
Right. So it's, that's where it gets interesting, because it's really up to the designer to decide. And
so they can drop a comment on the desk. This is not a right. real desk that we want to project.
Right.
This is just
so
how they're going to be.
They could do that, right? So if they go to the comment and say, you know, not a real desk, just background or something like that. And then now that's like a spatial comment bubble that, you know, if someone else opens from the outside, they can see which angle this was written in. And one thing I can do is I can, you know, I just have this like UI PNG and I can drag and drop that here where, you know, and we also have like a Figma integration, which, you know, I won't go through right now because it's like, it takes some steps to like set up.
Yeah.
But what Bezi supports is like, it allows you to just import a lot of the UI designs that you might already have from Figma
right.
or as like PNGs like this. That you can just bring into this 3D scene. And now that this is sort of a 3D environment, what I will do here is I will just bring it up in height and then kind of like move it to this sort of space. And then now also what I can do is I can just press shift and kind of pull it back, right? So now we have this kind of Vision OS-esque, well, we're not there yet, but like structurally, it shows you what's possible.
That's really cool.
And if you were to put this on, you know, open this link in like a VR browser, you know, like in the headset,
yeah.
Then you would be able to interact with this in real time immediately.
So you can go and, so designer in this 2D web app, messing around with this, puts an experience together, immediately ships it to being able to feel what it's like into that 3D experience.
Right.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. So there's no like converting this into code
right.
or like trying to like compile
skip
it.
That step.
Right, you just kind of skip the whole process. And then you just, because it's in the browser, you just open this link inside your headset. And then you're able to just experience it in real time. And I think that's something that really Bezi uniquely brings to the market. And like a lot of companies really appreciate when they're able to move fast like that.
Yeah.
And I think just to show you like one more thing, we also support like interactive like animations and so on. So I can also show you like how, let's say I have like a sphere, right? So I just added a sphere from the top zone. And let's say what I want to do is I want my interaction with this sphere to make this UI like grow in size or like kind of, you know, fade in or something. I'm kind of making stuff up right now. But what we can then do is like make sure to open the state machine. So this kind of goes into like the visual state of the object. And so, you know, if you think about like prototype mode for tools like Figma, where it's like now you have the UI designer in front of you, but you can now go into like a more interactive prototype that you can now use for like research sessions or testing with like potential users. This is all how it gets done in Bezzy. Huh. So what I can do is I can, you know, get this started here. Maybe it'll start like here in the base state, but then I can stretch it into a separate state. And in this separate state, I'll pull it back up. So you can see how the same object has like two states that it could be in.
Right. And that and, can be the trigger for it.
Right. So this arrow represents this like sort of event that would trigger it. And then the trigger object, instead of the UI itself, could be the sphere. So
that's really neat.
Yeah.
I'd love to kind of
yeah.
transition a bit towards like kind of like what all this means, right? Mm-hmm. So we kind of talked a bit about these, like, you know, it's nice to have a big tailwind, right, kind of supporting whatever, and you've got some history of why this kind of a tool makes sense. Then we've actually gone through this a little bit. What do you think, towards the end of this conversation, what do you think are some of the types of experiences and possibilities that all this new computing model is going to unlock? You know, if you're a company like Airbnb, I think you had a slide in your deck about that. Like, what does that mean for you?
I think it's a step towards, you know, it's freedom beyond the rectangular screen. Mm-hmm. Because in my opinion, the rectangular computer screens we interact with every day are somewhat of a like a stepping stone mm-hmm. for, you know, until we get to a future, which is now about to happen, where computing in the digital world is kind of overlaid on the physical world. And I think there are different ways to interpret this phenomenon. But I believe that this is the ultimate vision of computing. Because, you know, it's not once computing content kind of fills in the world around us, mm-hmm. that's it. Like, there's no like additional step beyond that. Right.
It's until we unlock a fourth dimension.
Right. Until we unlock a fourth dimension or, you know, brain computer interfaces or something like that. So this is it in terms of content and like products and entertainment right. kind of being a whole like infinite canvas yeah. for anyone, you know, whether you're a student just learning how to design or, you know, how to think about products, all the way up to someone who's just like retired and they're thinking through like, okay, what kind of entertainment would I want? Yeah. I think that this whole spectrum is now supported through this new platform as well.
Amazing. Yeah. Give us a quick piece of advice for anybody thinking about starting up. Hard lesson learned along the way. What do you got for us?
It's hard.
It's right? hard.
But because of that, you need to work on something that you're uniquely positioned to work on. And what I mean by that was, like, for me as an example, I realized that I had some unique experience at Oculus and like some combination of like design and like engineering and all this process stuff that allowed me to kind of gain an insight onto like how this could be an actual secret, if you will, that people can leverage in their own processes. Similarly, I think if someone's thinking like, okay, what's something I could start? You know, I think that there's a saying where like it's actually easier to run a hard startup than an easy startup.
Yeah.
Where it's like, because if it's easy, it sort of naturally has more competition. And if it's harder, you naturally don't have as much competition and you're able to kind of inspire the right people to like go on this journey with you, right? Because yeah. a startup's a journey. I think it's people, you know, often kind of jump on a cool idea
yeah.
or like this, like, oh, well, what if sort of situation. I think too, I've done that in the past. Mm-hmm. But I think it's more important to think about the world and like how your unique experience kind of fits into that.
Yeah.
That'll be my main thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for tuning in. Julian, thank you so much for having us at Bezzy HQ and walking us through all the amazing stuff you're doing.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see so much more Bezzy stuff once I finally get my hands on a headset and my wife lets me wear it around the house, hopefully, because it's pretty obvious that this is a pretty amazing new future with spatial computing. So thanks for walking us through it.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
Cool. Talk to you next time.